Future-Proof Extra from Newstalk.
Now, we tend to think of extinction as bad. I mean, lots of things dying is bad, I suppose, but of course it depends on your viewpoint. When it comes to the evolution of life, as well as being dreadfully destructive, extinctions are also among the most creative forces in natural history. So says Dr. Ben Garrod. He's Professor of Evolutionary Biology and Science Engagement at the University of East Anglia, and he has a fantastic new series of books telling the stories of extinction through fascinating and sometimes quite obscure animals that were key to evolution. He joins me now. Welcome to the programme, Ben. It's quite an interesting take. Extinctions are good.
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far. I'm not banging the drum for, yay, extinction. However, I do bang the drum for, as you said in your introduction there, that they are not purely a negative force. Yes, if you are one of those species or those taxonomic groups that gets knocked off your mortal coil, yes, sucks to be you. However, in the grand scheme of things, as you said, it is a tremendously creative force. You and I would not be sat here talking over Zoom had we not had a mass extinction 66 million years ago. Yes, there would have been mammals, but we wouldn't have had the success that we have had the dinosaurs nearly entirely gone extinct. And that's the same all the way through the history of the Earth, that every time you get a mass extinction, yes, at least 75% and as much as 96% of life disappears, but then it's a boom after that for all those species and taxonomic groups that are able to survive and then radiate, fill those ecological niches, and then diversify.
We have an audience that are, for some reason, fascinated with extinction events. I'm not quite sure why. But we did a great piece a number of months ago where we went through all of the different extinctions briefly. But just to remind people, these extinction events sort of squeeze down those larger animals mostly and allow for what had been smaller animals to eventually evolve into bigger ones. Did mammals just get one go of that? And does each extinction event create a sort of a dominant type of a group of animals?
In some ways, a really maybe a simplified narrative, yeah. And that's the narrative that often we give. So we talk about the age of the dinosaurs and the age of the mammals. That kind of fits with how we want to describe things, the narrative we give them. I would say now, we have more dinosaur species alive currently than we have identified in a complete fossil record. There are 10,000 or so species of dinosaur alive today, the birds, which are dinosaurs. We've got about maybe 1,000, potentially up to 1,200 species of extinct dinosaur that have been described. So if you really want to say we're in the age of the mammals, well, we're actually still in the age of the dinosaurs. So it's kind of the narrative that you give it, really. However, yes, what it does do, it gives certain groups a little bit of a slight advantage. So yes, the mammals were doing, they were doing reasonably well whilst the big iconic dinosaurs were around, like T-Rex and her kind. However, by them going extinct, allowed that existing group, the mammals, to do better. So it's not that they suddenly superseded them and it's now the age of the mammals. It's just the narrative that we give them, really.
So what happens is during these extinction events, while there is a sort of a dominant sort of group, there's lots of other different types of animals, insects and birds and fish and so on. Most of them get squeaked through some crack under the door during an extinction event. But one of the interesting thing that seems to happen is that the extinction events allow for ballooning of animals as well, right? Tiny animals go enormous and then sometimes shrink back down again.
Absolutely. So we've seen, so the mammals are a good group of that to demonstrate that. So at the end of the Cretaceous, when we had T-Rex and Triceratops and all the famous dinosaurs wandering around, we also had a lot of prehistoric marine predatory reptiles within the oceans around the world. So plesiosaurs, pliosaurs, ichthyosaurs, mosasaurs, a whole bunch of animals there that dominated our oceans. However, at the end of the Cretaceous, the asteroid struck, bang, boom, wallop, everyone gone. And within 10 million years, these little mammals that had survived and were walking around, these dog, maybe wolf-like sized animals over in what's now Pakistan, started to venture into the water and started to have a little bit of an increased success, those that were able to hunt in the water and hunt on the land. And fast forward 10 million years, 15 million years, suddenly you've got a radiation of a terrestrial quadrupedal animal that had evolved to go into the water that made it up to 190 tons, in terms of things like blue whales. So yes, there was an ecological niche left over at the end of the Cretaceous where nothing was dominating those marine waters. And suddenly you've got that another little group that pushed into there. So yeah, it completely allowed this radiation. And you're right, some of the mammals became incredibly big. So you're talking 190 tons is the biggest blue whale ever recorded, right down to bumblebee bats, these tiny little things, their body are about the size of your thumbnail. So it's difficult to say, but in my mind, mass extinctions definitely help allow that diversity to form.
The first of your books is about a creature that I haven't really ever heard of, the Hallucigenia. What is it and why is it important?
So Hallucigenia is, or was, this little worm from about the end of your small finger to the first joint that you had. So maximum of 2-3 centimeters long. It had a bunch of legs underneath its body. It had a bunch of spines on the top of its body. And it had wavy little arms, a little bit like an octopus, but on a much smaller scale. Now, this thing's called Hallucigenia because when scientists first described it and discovered it and actually identified it scientifically, it caused them so many problems in which way it went, which was the head end, which was the bum end, which was the top, which was the bottom, that they said it's like they're hallucinating. This thing was so annoying, so frustrating. And the reason I've chosen this one for the first of these first three books, and there are 8 in total, I've just only managed to write 3 so far, was because back about 400, 430 million years ago, in terms of this first mass extinction we talk about, this was one of the most complex organisms on the planet. So yes, people will say, why didn't you write about birds or T-Rexes back in... There was nothing like that back in that time. So in the Ordovician, it was all exclusively within pretty much coastal waters around the world. The planet didn't look like it did today. And the very biggest thing that I can manage to find was something called Anomalocaris, which is basically a really angry looking shrimp. So that was the biggest thing that lived on the planet about 400 million years ago. So it was a very different world. And as you mentioned earlier, there's a strong sense of storytelling, narrative, and we like to learn about some of these things. I think by including weird and wonderful species, some of which you will have heard of, T-Rex and Megalodon and Dunkleosteus, but some of those you won't, so Lizawickia and Hallucigenia, each of those is a character in a story, and each of these mass extinctions represents a chapter of a story that tells us why we're here today and how we're here, really.
It is a really weird animal to look at. It reminds me of lots of different other types of animals that didn't make it because they couldn't decide what they were supposed to be.
Absolutely, and you've hit the nail on the head there. Sometimes it pays to be a real specialist. You are the only thing in your environment. You specialize in the food that you eat, where you live, how you hunt, all the different things. That's great, unless your environment drastically changes. And then it pays off to be what we call a specialist generalist. Now, you and I are completely specialist generalists. We can pretty much survive anywhere, do anything. We're jack of all trades. And it's us, it's the rats, it's the squirrels, it's the pigeons. We're suddenly in a group that we don't really necessarily want to belong in. However, things like pandas, as we see, when we get habitat destruction and climate change, then those that are very specialized drop off really quickly. And we see this through the fossil record as well. Those that are really specialized and you can tell only had one ecological niche or one part of the environment in which they excelled completely got, well, screwed over in many ways because they weren't able to survive and adapt quickly enough when the world changed each time.
So this Hallucigenia lived 450 million years ago. Why is it important?
So each of these books is based on a mass extinction. There are 8 books in here. I've got 7 or so mass extinctions. I don't want to spoil the end too much just yet. And in each of these books, I wanted a central character or a central organism, central species each time to tell the last bit of their story before they went extinct. And in the first of these books, Hallucigenia, it tells the story of the end Ordovician mass extinction. So about 430 odd million years ago, the planet cooled to the extent that there were mile high glaciers over all the landmass we had. It completely drained coastal waters and absolutely made it inhospitable for these tropical or semi-temperate species to live. And sadly, yeah, Hallucigenia was one of the losers. It didn't make it through that first mass extinction, but it's a real shame because there's nothing like this now. People refer to it as a worm. It wasn't a worm. This was the precursor to many of the arthropods we have today. So insects, crustaceans, arachnids, stuff like this. This was an early prototype of something that would maybe evolve into that group one day. And these were weird, wonderful little things. They had They had tentacles, they had spines, they had legs with suckers and claws, and they wandered around filtering and fighting and doing that. So you're talking about this almost tiny little thing that you could easily have stepped on. It would probably have hurt your feet because they were spiny. However, they were one of the most dominant life forms on Earth. So I love the idea that we've gone from this weird little worm that didn't quite make it to where we are now. And again, it's that wonderful story that life has changed a lot in half a billion years.
Are all extinction events great freezes, or were there some of those that were the reverse, just enormous explosions of heat?
I always have a bee in my bonnet about things like this, because there are some authors that write wonderful kids' fantasy books out there with wizards and whatever, and that's great. However, nature has almost written the perfect series of books here, because every mass extinction was completely different. Some were absolutely frozen planet, where, as I said, you've got nearly mile-high glaciers across all the land. Others, so the end Permian, for example, there was an area that opened up that was millions of square miles of volcanic activity that lasted for about 500,000 years that completely overheated the planet and caused catastrophic issues there. There are also ones, so the next one, after you see the first mass extinction, the end Ordovician, and we lost poor little Hallucigenia, we then went into a period of really diverse oceans with lots of different species in, dominated by some absolute monsters. And that was the Devonian period. We call it the Age of the Fish, or the Age of the Fishes. And that ironically ended because of plants. So trees and bushes and other plants managed to kill nearly every animal on the planet as they evolved. As these plants evolved and colonized the land, they moved from aquatic species to terrestrial species. They eventually started breaking up bare earth. There was no soil at the time. So they started breaking up the bare earth, the rock. They started creating the very first soils on the planet. That sounds great, of course it is, but actually what happens is those minerals, those nutrients wash into streams, they wash into rivers, they wash into our coastal areas, and they create algal blooms. Now, when we get those now, even a couple of, miles of that, it completely destroys any marine life there. Now, what happened at the end of the Devonian was we had a global algal bloom caused by those pesky trees and plants, which almost killed all life on Earth. So this whole story of these mass extinctions, yes, sometimes it was a fireball from outer space, sometimes it was glaciers and huge volcanic lava fields, other times plants were the bad guys. So there's a whole set of whodunits tied into one here.
And who was the poor victim of this extinction in your book?
So we went from Hallucigenia, this weird little wandering worm-like animal, about 340 million years ago, and then about 360 million years ago, so about 100 million years later, it's a long time, but not in terms of geology, the world had completely changed. There were still very few animals living on land. Most of them were in the oceans, and they were dominated by this thing called Dunkelosteus. Now, any young listeners out there will completely go, yeah, I completely know Dunkelosteus. Most adults don't. It was a huge, super-sized monster fish. It was like a piranha on steroids, this thing. It weighed a couple of tons. It was about 8 or 9 meters in length.
Wow.
And had one of the most ferocious bite forces ever. This thing was absolutely insane. And it's weird because it had no need to be. It wasn't eaten by anything else. There was no real competitors out there. It just almost fell victim to its own evolution. The only thing that ate Dunkelosteus were other Dunkelosteuses. So these things were out competing their own species all the way through there. It had a huge arm and head, massive bony shearing plates. And I love the idea that when everything was just recovering and just evolving and just getting over that first mass extinction, this thing just rocketed up and completely dominated oceans. And I love the idea that something so big, so powerful, so iconic was brought down by plants on land. And again, I love these links, but how you nearly lose everything on the planet? Well, it was plants. That's great. That's such a great story.
That's brilliant. I suppose there is, as there is in all books, a lesson to be learned for young people reading these, Ben.
Absolutely. So I guess I'll start with the secondary one. The secondary one is to empower kids and help them realize that anyone listening right now can be a scientist, and science is for everyone, boy, girl, young, old, rich, poor, black, white. It doesn't matter who you are. Science is there for you. But equally, this is a series of books telling you about what's happened in the past to enable young readers to really have all the ammunition and knowledge they need to tackle what we're now going into. So we are now heading into a mass extinction. Yes, we've seen these terrible things that have happened before, do we want the same thing to happen now? So I think in order to really try and tackle extinction and mass extinction, it helps to understand what's happened before us. So the last book is about a species of gibbon called the Hainan gibbon. It's the only one where the animal isn't extinct yet. There are fewer than 30 left. And that last book tells the story of a species just circling the drain. And that last book is full of interviews with conservationists, with scientists, with meteorologists, to really equip the kids and other young readers. How do we do this? How do we try and stop this happening on our watch?
The books are called Extinct, The Story of Life on Earth. They're by Professor Ben Garrod. Ben, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You can find a link to these beautiful books on our Twitter page, or ask your local bookstore to order them in. Ben Garrod, Extinction is the series.